The kings of Macedonia, Alexander the Great, on to Babylon. At the end of the battle, at the end of the next day, when the advance resumed, Alexander headed for Babylon. There was no opposition, and before he arrived, envoys came to negotiate. Mazias, commander of the Persian right wing at Gaugamela, Arbela, fled to the city, for he had local connections and had married a Babylonian. The Babylonians had no great reason to love Darius or the Achaemenid dynasty, for they had their own culture and religion, memories of their former glories as well. In the past, they had even rebelled against Persian rule, provoked by real and imagined slights against their gods and their prestige, and of course had been suppressed. As elsewhere, dislike of Persian rule did not automatically translate to enthusiasm for a Macedonian conqueror. The city had strong walls and could choose to resist the invader. Yet there were no prospects of relief, and Alexander's army had shown its skill and determination at siegecraft. So in the end, Babylon would probably fall and be sacked. That was not an appealing prospect if something better was on offer. Elsewhere, pragmatism ruled. The Babylonians decided that loyalty to Darius was extremely dangerous and highly unlikely to bring them any benefit, at least in the immediate future. And Mazias and the commander of the Persian garrison agreed. On October the 18th, Alexander issued a decree guaranteeing that his army would respect the rights and possessions of individual Babylonians and not enter forcibly into their houses. Once again, displays of respect by both parties ensured that Alexander received the submission that he wanted, and his new subjects gave it in a way that made it acceptable to them. When the Macedonians reached the city later in the month, they were greeted outside by a delegation of local dignitaries and senior Persians. Crowds cheered, strewing flowers in the path of Alexander, and his men paraded through the streets. Babylon was larger, far more ancient and far grander than any Greek city or community the Macedonians had yet encountered. They can only have been a source of wonder. Its hanging gardens were later always included in lists of wonders of the world. Alexander offered sacrifice to the city's patron deity. Baal Marduk was named as king and given control of the treasury and the citadel, as well as gifts ranging from luxuries to the food and supplies needed for his army. The agreements were honored and there was no looting, while the subsequent appointment of Mazias as his satrap for the area might suggest that other provisions had been included in the deal, even if kept secret. This was the first time that Alexander had appointed a Persian, so it marked a major step in creating his new kingdom of Asia, even though he made sure that Mazias' independence was limited by the presence of Macedonians in key financial and, of course, all military posts. Yet it was a sign to others that his war with the Persian king was not with his subjects if they showed a sense to submit. As in Egypt, Alexander respected local cults and conventions. One mark of this was his promise to rebuild the great 8-story ziggurat temple to Baal Marduk, destroyed by the Persians. Although he took no concrete action to achieve this and expected the locals to direct and fund the project. For the Babylonians, this was a transition from one master to another, and it was relatively seamless, just as when the king died and was succeeded by his heir. A fragmentary cuneiform tablet described Darius as the king of the world on the morning of Arbela Gaugamela. Later, it notes that, quote, the troops of the king deserted him, and a little later was a matter-of-fact statement that Alexander, king of the world, entered Babylon. End of quote. The temple record simply continued. Whoever was king, the Macedonians upheld their side of the agreement, denied plunder. Alexander gave a bounty to each soldier from the captured treasury, with companion cavalry receiving 600 drachma apiece. That's 1/10 of a talent. Allied horsemen, 500. Macedonian infantry, 200, and the mercenaries a sum equal to 2 months' pay. They also had several weeks of rest, feasting in the spectacular city, courtesy of a population eager to please their new masters. According to Curtius, many Babylonian women, and not simply prostitutes and entertainers, but those from respectable families, were said to be adept at a form of striptease dancing. Ancient authors believe that too much time was spent in fleshpots in a city and it weakened an army, but there was no sign of this when the Macedonians moved on after a few weeks. The next great city along the road was Susa, and once again negotiations were complete before he arrived. On the road, Alexander was met by the son of Abulits, the satrap, bringing written assurances that the city and the treasury were now his. Like Messias, Abulits became satrap in service of a new overlord. The march from Babylon to Susa took the army 20 unhurried days and ended in another warm welcome. Unlike Babylon, Susa was a Persian city. Administrative center of the empire, and the leaders and people alike accepted the presence of the conqueror, who in turn treated them with respect. Its treasury contained at least 50,000 talents of silver and gold coin and bullion, as well as much other wealth. Each gain to Alexander was another loss to Darius and his capacity to fund the war. Now let me give you an example, some value as to that much, you know, in talents. The city of Carthage, at its height, and it's one of the great trading cities, took an income of 50 talents to 80 talents a year. Here's 50,000 talents. Even if you cut it in half, cut it in three quarters, it's a monumental amount of money in bullion form. Now, respect for the locals, however, only went so far, and there were celebrations of victory marked by sacrifices and athletic competition. Statues of Harmodius and Aristogiton, Athenian heroes who had assassinated a tyrant, had been part of the plunder brought home by Xerxes. They were now sent back to Athens and remained on view in Arrian's day. There was a royal throne and footstool in the palace at Susa, designed for the tall Darius, and when Alexander climbed onto the chair, his feet didn't reach the footstool, so someone pushed the higher royal dining table over instead. A eunuch himself, part of the spoils of conquest, wept at the sight, and Alexander was supposed to have been about to order it taken away, when Philotas assured him that it was a good omen. Amid the celebration, there was an awareness that the war was not over. Around this time, the reinforcements ordered from Antipater earlier in the year caught up with the army. It was the largest ever sent, numbering 15,000 troops, including no fewer than 6,000 Macedonian infantry, 500 Macedonian cavalry, as well as contingents from Thrace and the Peloponnesus. In return, Alexander sent 3,000 talents of silver from his new acquisitions on the slow road back to Macedonia for Antipater to use in the war against Agis. He was aware that this conflict had broken out, was unsure how it was progressing. As the year came to an end and winter began, Alexander resumed the advance, heading for Persepolis, the grand ceremonial capital of the Achaemenids, and some 400 miles from Susa. The road led through the foothills of the Zagros Mountains, and the hill people, known as the Zeke, they demanded payment for safe passage, as they were accustomed to do with all travelers, including those on business or the Persian king. Alexander was in no mood to humor them, but pretended compliance, and then led out the Hypaspists and other picked troops during the night, ravaged the tribal lands, and then seized the path that the locals had expected to hold against him. Some were killed, but most fled, and the intervention of Darius's mother gave Alexander a pretext for mercy. He imposed an annual tribute on livestock on them, since they did not employ currency. After this, we're still heading to Persepolis, and Darius is still alive, so we'll see what happens next. Now, the sources for this: The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. Some additional sources for the sections on Alexander rules would include, of course, Arrians, The Campaigns of Alexander, In the Footsteps of Alexander the Great by Michael Wood, The Wars of Alexander the Great by Haeckel, and The Story of Alexander's Empire by Mahaffey. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.